Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, my good buddy, producer extraordinaire, and as awake as I am, co-host, Cameron McCoy. How are you doing, friend?
I feel really bad, because as we were doing our just pre-show countdown here, I totally took away the moment where you sip your cup of coffee, so please imbibe. I need you to do this right now so that I don't feel so guilty. There we go.
I'm running very low. This is the problem with having a child that now consumes coffee is my coffee pot runneth empty a lot.
Yeah.
You know, Cameron, the real disadvantage of kids. Nobody tells you this. They steal your coffee. I'm going to have to buy a new pot just to fulfill. Because we just have like a 10-cupper, which was great when there was two of us.
And oh, dude. You got to up that, man. Get the 12-cupper. 14. Let's go there.
Okay? I think 14 is a very real possibility. And I don't know that we've ever really talked about this, but I do not like Keurig machines. Mm-hmm. And you might think, oh, it's because Curtis is worried about the waste and, you know, all this. I would love to tell you that I am that concerned of a human being, but no, I just really don't like the taste.
I agree. Freeze-dried Keurig coffee.
Yeah. It's just freeze-dried whateverness, and but we have a Keurig machine entirely to brew tea bags. Every night when I have my decaf tea, like an old man, I heat it up with a Keurig machine. It's like instant tea, which is great. Anyway, Cameron, old man stuff aside, wow, there's a lot going on in the world of Magic. And I'm just curious, what did you get a chance to do this week?
You know, this week was a weird week. Didn't pay a lot of attention to Magic, sadly. And life of things got in the way again on Friday, so I didn't get a chance to do the Modern Horizons pre-release, or release, I guess. I will be doing that, I hope, this afternoon, so I can check it out. Other than that, it's just been the historic grind, man. And we're reaching that point again. I think it happened. It's just the constant cycle with Historic. Like, I am very thrilled that we have this format and whatnot. It is beginning to feel a little stale. The archetypes have really found their place. And I just, I'm getting really sick of seeing certain cards all the time. So I don't have really anything new to report. I've been playing a lot. I mean, I've been playing Jeskai Control, which I'm bored of. I've been playing the Grixis, or I guess Black Red Pyromancer, which is fine, but, you know, is not performing great. And then the green white darling of Maverick, or whatever you want to call it, which is just interesting but not good, right? So, I mean, I can hover between three decks, but I've just, like, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this, I really do feel like Mizzix's Mastery is a problem, and that card probably will need to be addressed at some point.
Yeah, let's, I mean, I guess we didn't lead off with the ban cast.
It's true,
we'll,
right? Yeah.
We'll cover, I guess, that a little bit more in depth here in a minute, but I agree. I'm still stunned that Mizzix's Mastery is just allowed to be around. It's so strange. Mm-hmm. I am very much feeling format fatigue. Mm-hmm. With Standard and Historic, even though theoretically Historic should be newish, it really doesn't feel it. So I spent the week arena cubing. Wow. So I haven't enjoyed this rendition of the arena cube as much as previous ones. And I would have to look at the list. I can just tell you what kind of my kind of off-the-cuff impressions have been. And it seems like they have made ramp a lot worse. They've taken out a certain number of wrath effects, but control is, and this is going to sound crazy coming from me, control is probably too good in this cube, even with the reduced amount of wrath effects, because, just being frank with you, the Mystical Archives really lean you into a control style deck. And there are, I think, an absurd amount of counterspells in this cube. Obviously, there's counterspell, disallow, Saw It Coming, Spell Pierce, Commit to Me, like there is just the full slew. So you kind of get into these matches where it mirrors what historic is, where you are either hyper aggressive or you are some kind of control deck. And sometimes these control decks have a combo finish, but some of them are just good old control. And so whenever you're in these things, so like I'll give you an example, like a lot of times at the draft table, I feel like I'm fighting for control cards because there's probably three control drafters at the table. So I'll like pack one, pick one, a Doomscar or a Sphinx's Rev or something that's like notably puts me into control. And then it's like, well, I probably should bail on this because I'm not getting signaled correctly. But the mid-range green stuff is so earth-shatteringly bad that I just don't want to do, like, I don't want to do it. And like, bizarrely, they have Field of the Dead and Golos, but like a lot of the other, what you would think of as ramp stuff, gone. And it's fine and it's very refreshing in terms of like, you know, hey, you're playing different matches and, you know, it does have that kind of cube thing where sometimes you, because I play the single elimination cube because it tends to go faster because there's more people in it. But you might draft a deck and you're like, man, this thing is like three fire emojis. And then you go 1 and 3. And then the next time you play, you're like, this thing is a ham sandwich. And you go 6 and 3 or 7 and 3. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a really strange, there's a lot more variance applied to it because it's a high powered cube now and because you're usually in best of one. But I would just say, like, I probably felt like I shredded a lot more ticks on this than I have, or not ticks. Wow.
Dude.
Yeah, I know. This is how brain dead I am. I've actually gone back 6 years in time. I shredded a lot of my gold, like doing this. And I told myself, so like I set aside like 16,000 gold and I was like, I'm going to play until the 16,000 runs out. Well, I've had good enough record to kind of float and I still have like a couple, you know, drafts. So, but it's just like the variance is so high. It's like, I'll go 1 and 3 and then I'll make it all back. And then I, so I'm probably sure I'm netting out like right at a 50% win percentage, but the lows and highs are so frustrating. Yeah. So cube, it's a good time. You should do it. If you're not, I would just say this maybe isn't my favorite cube. And I don't think it's super representative of what's on Arena. I want more historic anthology stuff, less standard stuff, like less standard stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, just chill on the counter spells. So I do want to talk about, like, we're kind of burying the lead here. I'm sorry. The pre-release for Modern Horizons 2. So my plan was to pre-release Saturday night and play FNM like standard Friday night. Last week, my shop said, hey, weekly, starting this week, Friday night Magic standard. So I show up and I'm like, I'm here for standard. They're like, we're not doing standard. It's the pre-release week. And I was like, okay, wait. So it started every week starting last week, but not this week. Okay, gotcha. So I was like, well, can I get in? And their pre-release had sold out their allocation. Wow. And I said, like, well, look, hey, I'm going to go out to eat with my family real quick. If you guys, because I was there like 2 or 3 hours early. And I was like, hey, if you guys have an open spot, call me and I'll pop in. Well, they just decided that me and another guy, they were just going to let us in. So it was supposed to be a 16-person flight. They just let it be an 18-person flight.
Awesome. That's great.
So, yeah. And in my show, my shop does make you show proof of vaccination. So when you're back there, as soon as you show proof, like, you're just good, right? And so it was $50 for 6 packs, which I think if you look at the estimated value, it's pretty reasonable. I opened a black-white pool, and I opened two kind of premium cards in the set, Dothi Voidwalker, which is the Leyline of the Void like creature, and that card is actually taken off. Like, it's a huge like gainer over the last week. And I opened a Solitude, which was cool. And then I had a bunch of removal spells and kind of garbage. But here's the thing, Cameron. My suggestion to you today, open the card Solitude.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. That card led to some of the most vicious blowouts that I've ever committed to Unlimited. And my opponents sometimes had really good decks where they would do this stuff of like, you know, reanimation of this and this, and they would bring in a, you know, 7/7. Oh, like, wow, cool. So, Flash in Solitude. Is that, are, you know, is that it? Are we done? Yeah. And I also had the, there's a paladin that's white, and it's got pro black, pro red. And I had two opponents that were black, mostly black decks. And, you know, we learn really quickly why pro protection is not in formats anymore, because it was like, I would just play this 2-mana 2/2. And they like,
blowout.
That was it. That was the match. And so, I think the format is good. It is super high powered. Even the, you know, my opponents that were getting blown out by Solitude, they were doing some pretty high end stuff. Almost everyone I played against was in black. So I just don't know if that's like at the common level the most powerful color, because there's just so much removal there. The thing that I would tell you is, Cameron, there is an obscene amount of keywords. So there was a couple moments of people going. And I have a great shop guy who like knows all this stuff, but they were like, okay, explain to me Outlast again. Okay, explain to me Shadow again. You know, like all of these things. What did I have? I had Forecast. I was like, okay, I don't remember how this works at all. Right? So you're going to have those moments. It is a fun limited set.
Value-wise, you think it's worth it?
Yeah, well, look, I went 3-0-1. Me and my opponent split in the finals or whatever, and I could go home. And then I opened a Scalding Tarn. So I did okay. But here's what I'm going to run into is I am trying to trade these cards into standard cards, Cameron. And in my area, no one has them. So I was walking around with a Solitude and a Dothy Voidwalker and a Scalding Tarn. Does anyone have any Goldspan Dragons? No one even had them in their binder because no one bought that set.
Yeah.
And so this is the issue. It's like, I'm trying to build for standard because that's what I care about. And I mean, modern, I'm just going to play whatever, Storm. Yeah. And I have these cards that they're at a, maybe not their highest value, but at a value where I can get into some standard stuff. And I don't know how I'm going to do it. I might have to go back to a trading service.
Jeez. Man, I'm wondering if like how many of those cards are going to be Pioneer, Modern, Legacy staples that were printed over the last year. Is it worthwhile to buy a box and just to hold on to that stuff for a while? I don't know. And maybe it would just be great to just hold on to a box and break that out in a year just to play it so I could actually physically play that.
Are you talking about Limited? Kaldheim?
Kaldheim or, yeah, any of those ones, yeah, that have come out the last year.
Well, yeah, and then, like, the price of some of this stuff is just, you know, it's inflated at my shop because the cards just aren't in circulation the way that they are. But when you look online, standard is very cheap.
Yeah.
And it has to do with these collector boosters and stuff like that. Like, I'm not going to, like, talk too much on the MTG Finance end because God knows I shouldn't. But I do know that that's a thing that, like, people have been opening these collectors and getting the Mystical Archives and all this. And so, yeah, that's pushing something like Prismari Command down in value. But if you're just, like, trying to binder trade at a shop,
yeah,
like, it's just not there. They're just not there. So it's going to be interesting me trying to acquire this stuff without – I mean, I might just have to sell it to the shop and be like, okay – give me some Goldspan Dragons. Where it used to be trading from modern to standard cards was like, I mean, doing that, like you could trade a Scalding Tarn into most of a standard deck without even thinking about it. Right. Yeah. All right. Let's get out of this segment, come back and talk about the impact of Modern Horizons and what the future of Historic looks like. We'll be right back. All right, Cameron. So there I was. At a pharmacist appointment for my daughter was getting her second shot. And lo and behold, my phone, I check it and see that Time Warp has been banned. Where are you at on this, man? I know we texted back and forth about it a little bit, but
yeah, you know, when the Mystical Archives were initially released, I would say that Time Warp was one that I had an eyebrow raise with, just because of the casting cost being one less, all these things. Turns and Arena has been, I would say, bad for the format since almost the beginning of Arena, you know? So I guess what I'm saying is, like, sure, Time Warp should probably never have been released into Historic in the first place. It should have been on there with Counterspell, and I wouldn't have thought anything of it. That being said, I don't know if Time Warp is actually the real problem, as we have spoken about before. We have enablers like a one mana draw two discard spell, or discard two, you know, spell that is banned in Modern. And we have another, you know, the Mizzix's Mastery that's enabling five color decks or like five color cards to just run rampant, in addition to, you know, absurd dragon decks that we're seeing right now. So that's where I'm at. Like, sure, Time Warp should never have been in the format. I don't think you're addressing the real problem.
Yeah, I think, to your point, which is a good one, Time Warp was definitely a card that was concerning in the context of the previous Historic.
Mm-hmm.
Because ramp growth spiral decks were so prevalent that we're like, oh no, this is an easy thing. Nissa plus growth spiral plus all runs epiphany, ramp, 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 ramp. And like the truth is now, those decks are way too slow. Like, growth spiraling on turn two, LOL, man. Have a good time. Who cares? Like, could Field of the Dead be fine? Like, I mean, is this where we're at? But, you're right in that. I don't think it addresses the real problem. My suspicion with this ban is they are entirely looking at the telemetry that's coming off the did you have fun this match or not?
Mm-hmm.
And I would bet you dollars to donuts the most likely outcome of the did you have a good time or not, frowny face, happy face, is if you get time walk twice in a row, there is not a human being on the planet that doesn't hit the frowny face. So I think it was just a, hey, look at the data. This is what it's telling us. I don't know that it was a, quote, metagame call. Faithless Looting, like, I don't know what to tell anyone anymore on that. Like, obviously, it's busted. Obviously, Mizzix's Mastery is in that boat, too. And I want to talk about Brainstorm, because, so they had a pro event. Top 8, 31 copies of Brainstorm out of 32 possible. And, like, I guess the guy just decided to put in 3 on accident or something. I don't know what happened there.
Yeah.
But I was talking about this at my shop. And, again, a human being who I like and respect is a good Magic player said, yeah, but Brainstorm's not even that good in those formats. I don't know where this misconception started.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're meeting me at, quote, Brainstorm isn't that good, I don't know what to tell you. Because that opinion, like, you know what's an opinion? An opinion could be, I like strawberry pie over apple pie. That's an opinion. But when it's factual that Brainstorm has essentially been one of the most powerful cards ever printed and is like a staple in, it's restricted in Vintage, the basis for the entire format in Legacy. And then you're going to hit me with, yeah, but it's not that good. Like, what? Right?
Yeah.
And as long as it's printed, Jeskai is going to probably be the best deck. Like, if they are going to keep on this path, they have to print a very specific subset of cards for it to not be Jeskai or Jeskai combo, because there's just no earthly reason. Lightning, Helix, Wrath of God, just way too efficient to deal with creature decks.
Yep.
And then you always have some other kind of thing that you could be doing, and Brainstorm allows you to find those things. And I just, like, this is a patently obvious thing. Cameron, I'm glad you're sitting down for this. Drawing 3 cards in Magic the Gathering is very strong.
Yeah. I mean, even without a fetch land, digging 3, just just digging three is better than scrying one, I would argue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Controversial. I know. We're probably going to get some heat for these opinions, but no, I just don't, it's okay to not have a fetch land. Anyway, so I think we're not through here, and my belief would be, or my wish would be that they just really get after it in historic anthologies, but instead of targeting control or combo cards, going, okay, Death and Taxes, Merfolk, you know, Nykfit, these other kind of decks that have shown historically, no pun intended, that they can compete on the level of a Brainstorm deck. Let's get those decks in there. I mean, Death and Taxes is a perfect kind of deck that could attack what this Jeskai deck is. And then once you have that kind of paper and rock, there's a very easy way of creating a scissors that can beat Death and Taxes that might be worse against the Jeskai. And then we can kind of go from there. But, like, you just don't, like, whatever, Jund, Death and Taxes, you just don't have that equivalent. I mean, please don't come at me with Historic Merfolk. That deck is garbage compared to the real thing. Mm-hmm. So, and the real thing is generally, but good against control, right?
Sure, yeah. It has its place.
Yeah, that's how I would put it. It fulfills its role. Okay, so Modern Horizons 2 has been out on Modo for like a week. Apparently, it's really hard to get the cards. So some of these deck dumps might not be like super accurate. Mm-hmm. I know people were having trouble getting Raghavans, according to the podcast I was listening to. But, you know, you got to keep in mind that there's a very serious subset of people that play on Magic Online and, like, basically no one else. So the cards just aren't getting open at the same rate. That being said, I sent you a bunch of Urza Saga decks. The person that gets the cookbook, however you say that card. And our one Solitude deck. What do you think about the decks that have been coming out of this, Cameron?
Yeah, just based off our review and me just looking at the format or the cards that have been released, I am kind of surprised, pleasantly surprised, at how many artifact decks are coming to the fold out of that. I think that's good. I think having... I miss Affinity. I really do. And I feel bad that, like, the key card in Affinity was, you know, a good enabler for that deck, but also an awful enabler for everything else that was going on. So, you know, so long, Affinity. Sorry. Glad to see it kind of come back, and maybe it will have its place in Modern again. I think that's good. The deck that I'm, like, most interested in, and really no surprise, I guess, is the Stoneblade Orzhov deck that's using Solitude. And what I love about this and what I commented to you is that, I mean, within the 75, I don't think there's a single Path to Exile, which is baller. Like, I find that super awesome that there might be a playable deck out there where Path to Exile is, you know, put by the wayside because Solitude is just so incredibly powerful. So, yeah, man, I'm liking what I'm seeing with that deck specifically, just because it's totally my play style, and I want to pick up my copies of Solitude and start playing this deck.
Yeah, so worth pointing out a couple things with the Solitude deck. So first of all, it is an ephemerate slash.
Yeah.
It also leans heavily on a couple different Vindicate-like effects. So obviously there's four Vindicate now, but then there's that prismatic ending that exiles based upon the number of, like, different colors of mana you spend on it, which I would say, honestly, a lot of times is going to hit, you know, these really low-level artifacts. You're only playing really with three colors or two colors. But what's very interesting is what Urza Saga is doing in the format. So I've heard people say, look, people just haven't come around to how to hate this card. It is now kind of the most powerful card, so we kind of have to adjust to it. And then other people saying, this is Hogak all over again. This thing is going to get banned inside of a month. I've only watched a few streams with it. It does it is a lot more powerful than it looks on its face. And just the generating extra stuff all the time leads to these decks that get way ahead, way faster. And like, and the same with the cookbook person, like, it's all about just getting extra stuff on the field and then how do you leverage it? Mm-hmm. You know, it is not so like Affinity obviously is just leveraging the artifact count total, right? But the Sack deck, like, it is bizarre because it just looks like it does nothing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But then when you watch it play, it just generates so much stuff. So, like, for example, if you have the cookbook in play plus Oval Chase Daredevil in your hand, essentially you can just keep discarding Oval Chase Daredevil for as many cookbooks as you have to create food. And then, like, basically you just get use Urza Saga to create a construct, and you have, like, a million D artifacts in play. There's all these other things. Like, some of them go and get a Time Sieve, which is a sack. I think it's four artifacts. Is it four or five? You sack so many artifacts to create an extra turn. And because you've generated so much stuff, you can do that. Obviously, the Cauldron Familiar thing is just, like, crazy good against these, like, Jund-style decks, because you're just like, I will block your Tarmogoyf. I will sack my Cauldron Familiar. Right? And so you just do this stuff over and over again and just cycle through your deck. And there's a bunch of different, like, corner case combo things. But then you also can just get into these knockdown dragouts where you just end up killing them with the Cauldron Familiars and Witches Ovens, and that's fine. Yeah. But yeah, like, basically the sideboard becomes a Wish sideboard with Karn, and then you get whatever it is, the thing that you need. And the deck looks so threat light, but basically Bloodgas, Cauldron Familiar, and the constructs off of freaking the Urza Saga, and that's it. That's it. Which is bizarre. Right? It's a very interesting format right now. Early in the format, there were a lot of Shardless Agent decks, and now those seem to have fallen by the wayside thanks to Urza Saga.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I know your hope. You want to do that Shardless Agent into Ancestral Vision, Cameron, but it just might not be there.
Live the dream.
Right? Right? All right, man. So I'm playing Modern next week. I don't know if I'm showing up with Control or Death Shadow. I think I'm probably just going to play Death Shadow with a couple of Voidwalkers and just see what happens. Yeah.
I might try a Control deck from 2016 and see how well that performs now.
Do so. It. I mean, dude, just show up with counter spells and like one Spectral Sailor. Like, just make it happen. Make it happen. All right, dude, we're going to get out of this segment, come back and talk about what else we've been up to. All right, Cameron, pretty light week for me. I know you've had an insane week as well. What have you been up to, man?
Yeah, well, I mean, first and foremost, I am so excited for E3 this week. And so this is like one of those weeks where I really look forward to all the video game releases, but specifically just texting you like a madman when I hope I get like a Metroid Prime 3 or a Metroid Prime or, you know, something along those lines. It's an exciting time for us, right?
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk E3. Let's do that, because it kind of technically already started. But so Ubisoft went, and then there was Jeff Keighley's like, hey, I'm not E3 anymore. I'm doing my own thing. And I watched that, and I felt like I was too old for it. There was a lot of like, hey, man, Fortnite, Fall Guys, Among Us is announcing. And like, there was some cool stuff there, and he does a really good job of like adding musical performances to the trailers, which I think makes it kind of have this award show sheen to it that maybe most video game stuff doesn't have. But it was okay. And then the Ubisoft stuff, like, are you showing an Assassin's Creed? No. Okay.
Exactly.
Well, then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you bringing Splinter Cell back? No. Well, all right. And remember when they were going to make a... Yeah. And like, I don't have a problem with Far Cry. It's just the problem The issue I've always run into with Far Cry is about 6 hours in, I really get done with them. I'm like, okay, I've taken down another compound.
They've mastered that pattern, and you're just going to you know, do you want tigers this time instead of, yeah, that's about it, right? So.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool to explore. I just wish, because I don't know if you remember, Far Cry 2 had a faction system that they didn't really follow through on, and I wish other Far Cries would get, like, deeper on that, where it's like, mm-hmm. not everywhere you go is always just me having to shoot.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Crazy thought. But I'm going to assume you saw the Elden Ring trailer, Cameron?
Yeah. Yeah. That looks... It looks really good.
I mean, now that we're officially From Software guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was super excited by it. I really am interested in seeing what they do with the open-ish world.
Yeah.
Which kind of on a technical level, some of their stuff has been before. It's just been more confined, I would suspect, due to the technology. But, I mean, there are spaces in Sekiro that are quite, quite large. Like, it's not...
Yeah.
And it's
big arenas.
Yeah. And so, especially some of the stuff that's by the mountainsides are huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, they are going to, I just really confident in the quality of what I'm about to play.
Yeah.
The George R.
But it's, yeah, Martin, right? I mean, like, we're getting like the confluence of like a love letter to Curtis, I think.
Yeah, well, and let's just say this, because I think George R. R. Martin has like reached meme status at this stage.
Sure, yeah.
And it's kind of a shame, because I do think George R. R. Martin did something really important for fantasy novels, in that he brought pace and kind of intrigue to a format that didn't do a great job with that stuff before. Right, mm-hmm. Everyone was trying to copy paste Lord of the Rings, largely. There are exceptions mm-hmm. like Glenn Cook and all these things, but like going outside of that and writing basically a soap opera within the context of Lord of the Rings was incredible mm-hmm. at that time. And obviously, the innovation has spawned a bunch of, you know, successors, and some of which I think have surpassed him. Like, I'm reading I'm about to finish the first Expanse book, and it is entirely structured like a George R. R. Martin book. Because one of the guys was his personal assistant for a while.
Oh, really?
It's two authors, yeah. And anyway, boy, it reads like it, but it's just like they've come out with 9 books. And I would argue that something like Rage of Dragons has taken what Martin did and made it even more intensive in terms of the pacing and all that. But like fantasy novels have always struggled with pacing. Like that's just... I mean, Lord of the Rings is like holy text to me, and it struggles with pacing, right? So I'm hopeful that they bring, like, he brings some good lore to it. But at the end of the day, man, does it feel like Demon Soul or Dark Souls 4?
In a way, and I guess I'm okay with that.
Yeah, same.
I mean, yeah, yeah. And so, like, everything about it, like, I'm just excited, and like this company right now, like, if they just want to do a variation on a theme and deliver that in an open world environment, like I signed me up. I'm going to buy this day one, and I'm going to have a blast playing it.
Yeah, it's going to be hard for me to go back to that style after Sekiro, I think, because you know, Sekiro didn't have a stamina bar. I really hope that they have also shown. Are that they've grown enough in terms of the Demon Souls, Dark Souls stuff, because that didn't have a great narrative or didn't like had an under the surface narrative. But I think both Bloodborne and Sekiro showed a huge leap forward in narrative. I actually really like the story in Sekiro, like a lot.
I do too. Yeah.
And so I'm just really hopeful that they use those chops along with George R. R. Martin to create a good narrative. But just the art design, dude. Oh my God. Oh my God. Think about how that's going to look on your PC, Cameron. You're going to be a happy boy.
Yeah, I'll be very happy.
Have you already like just told your wife, like, look, there's going to be a week in January. I'm just not going to be around. Be okay
you know,
with that.
I was going to take Christmas vacation, but I might have to take like a January vacation instead, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So here it also says that you're... oh, sorry. I want to go back. E3. Any other games that you want to see? You're hoping
to
see?
Yeah, I mean, like... I'm interested to see what Nintendo, obviously I'm a Nintendo fanboy, but just because the Switch has been kind of like middling in this weird place of, it's not end of life yet, but it just feels kind of like it's on the downward slide. So I'm interested to see what new things are actually going to come out from Nintendo as far as like their AAA titles.
Yeah, same, dude. I think we might see Metroid Prime Collection.
Mm-hmm. That'd be great.
That would be great. Everybody's saying the Switch Pro is like incoming, but it's like I would have to see what you're going to do to that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be pretty terrible if they go, hey, to play Breath of the Wild 2, you're going to need a Switch Pro. That's going to be a little harsh. Nintendo. I feel like they've had kind of a very middle of the road year for them. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I mean, it's hard because it's COVID, but like their biggest release was like Super Mario 3D World or something. You know, like it's just not.
Yeah.
Could you just re-release Wind Waker for crying out loud? Just let me do that. Sony showed Horizon 2. I thought it looked gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very in for that. And that's the kind of open world that I really like to explore. I think it's going to be super fascinating. It's going to take place in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I don't know if did you watch the trailer? Like,
yeah. I'm gonna play it. You know, like yeah. I don't really like. They just need to show me a couple screenshots to just refamiliarize where I want to go with that, and I'll be happy. I'm gonna once again pick that up and play it day one.
Yeah, for me, obviously, what Bethesda shows today, I think, is going to be pretty important as well because. The rumor is that they're going to show Starfield, which this would be the Fallout 4 team. So Fallout 4, it's been
five years.
Yeah, it's been a minute. It's a
while.
And their MO is when they show a game, it's coming out within 6 months. So that's going to be pretty wild. I think obviously we're going to see the delayed Halo, and it's probably going to look like Halo. And hey, it's going to be on Game Pass, so I'll just play it. And that's that. But no, E3, it just feels like there's a lot of unknowns. Metal Slug Tactics, I would say, is probably the most interesting thing I've seen so far. Did you see that?
No, I haven't seen that one yet. But
they're doing like a Through the Breach with Metal Slug.
Sign me up, man.
Yeah. Last thing on the show docket, it says that you're rebuilding speakers?
Yeah, dude. So I inherited an old Pioneer like amplifier from like 1978. It sounds incredible. And so I went and got that thing kind of restored, cleaned, put in like new LED lights and like a Bluetooth receiver into one of the input jacks. And it sounds great. So I picked up these old Pioneer 1970s speakers that are just ridiculous. They just needed a lot of love and care. So bringing out the soldering gun, putting a new, like one of the Celestion speakers was busted, so ordered a new one on eBay, putting that in, putting in new sound foam inside the cabinet to kind of help with, phase issues and all of that. So they're almost done. Like I'm right now restoring the grill cloth and putting on new grill cloth on them. But I like Legos, like building a custom cabinet for like a arcade or whatever. When you get into like restoring or rebuilding these like these pieces of history and really getting them back to exactly what they were at the time, man, are they well built? They sound great or they look great. And I'm just having a blast putting this together to have like my retro old television set with like these, big old wood cabinet speakers and whatnot. It's just going to look, it's going to be like 1994 in my basement. And I'm really looking forward to that.
I'll be over as soon as you're finished, brother. You want a housewarming gift? I'll bring you whatever. That sounds amazing. And no, like, I guess this ties in with my watch obsession of late. Is like, I just really like the idea of something that's going to last. I feel like I've been on the upgrade train with everything.
Mm-hmm.
And some stuff, like video games, I think that's necessary because we just aren't there yet in terms of what that medium is capable of. But like with speakers, like the speakers that you get now are just made so in such a disposable way But the speakers that I grew up with in my house, I mean, they must have been in my house for 20 years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And with a turntable that lasted that entire time, right? I mean, the Boston self-titled out debut album doesn't play itself, Kevin. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, but Cameron, if someone would like to get at you and talk to you about restoring their speakers, where could they find you?
That's all on Twitter, @Cameron_McCoy.
And I'm @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeBeatMTG. We'll check you guys next week.